Technorama, episode 561, Deep in the Swamps of Dagobah. Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If you're listening or watching for the first time, thank you very much. It is a treat to be here and a treat to be on the end of a week or the beginning. Maybe we're out on the end of a branch for another week. If you're returning, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time once again. I'm Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, and joining me as always is the wonderful Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing great because I'm enjoying this treat we call Technorama.
We got to adjust your camera down just a little bit. Your chin is just barely clearing that lower third.
Is that better?
No. No, you're not.
That's a receding hairline.
You're not pulling off a Kilroy here.
There. Is that better?
It's exactly where that'll do.
It should be down. Is it not?
You're pretty much centered in the screen now. Thank you. Also joining us in the binary studio once again is the wonderful Brian Brown. How are you, Brian?
Good. Hi.
Have you had a week?
Actually, this week's been not bad. I've been sick the week before, so I'm kind of at the crud that Donna has.
The data center move is over. The house is being rebuilt.
Yeah, we actually got a check and all that fun stuff. So things are...
The house is rebuilt?
No.
It's getting rebuilt.
Gosh, I wish. So I need a magic wand is what I need.
See, well, you're going to move back in your house and go, oh, this is... It's not as great as I thought. It was over at Chuck's house.
Yeah, you know.
Where's Chuck's the jacuzzi?
House? Yeah. Yeah, having Chuck and the cat nearby.
What was my good D20 last time?
I don't know.
I don't remember. All right. Oh, runaway D20s.
All right. I remember which one of mine was. That was this one right here.
All right. We have some feedback. We asked you last week. Let's do the feedback song while I dig these links out.
Those letters, I love those letters. Let's find out what you got to say.
Oh boy!
Mailman, mail today.
And tonight mailman. You get three ding dongs.
We asked you last week, what movie/book/TV show can you not get enough of? And Cecilia Fetters writes, I've read Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban 5 times. I am always game to watch an episode of Sherlock from season 1 or 2 before things got complicated and started fooling with my emotions. And yeah. I still think Captain America, the first Avenger, is underrated.
No, I agree with that. Mm-hmm. Wow. Good stuff.
Mike Robeson writes books. He says the Pern series. Movie, Iron Sky. TV, The Orville. TV guilty pleasure on YouTube. I like that subcategory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mock the Week from BBC.
Hmm.
Interesting.
I don't think I've seen that. I've never watched that.
Neither.
All right. That was what we got off of our Technorama page. Then I shared it and got back.
Bunch of comments there.
Oh, 12 comments. Sure. I was going to say nothing. Doug Schultz says Quantum Leap. Interesting. Mm. I don't know that I could watch that over and over and over again.
No, I can't.
It's starting to show its age.
I have to give it a little bit of time between viewings, but yeah, I can always come back and watch Quantum Leap.
Here we go. John Clifford says Firefly. I'll give him that one. Yep. Clinton Alvord from Comedy Forecast over at comedyforecast.com.
Hey, by the way, go tune into his Podcast Today series throughout April. You'll hear my
He's having a lot of fun. I'm coming up on like day 17 and 18, which I think is on April 17th and 18th.
There you go.
How convenient.
He says, I'll binge anything. It's MST3K.
There you go.
Fair.
Nikki Vanderwijnen, honestly, the Harry Potter franchise, it was a huge part of my life growing up. That tells her age.
Yeah.
The books are incredibly. The movies are awesome, and it hurts me knowing that it's over. Okay, good answer.
It's never over.
Steve Asplund says, 24. I have all of them on DVD.
All 32.
John Miller Jr. says, show, House, MD. It's my go-to when there's nothing on TV or its internet services are down. I just pick a disc from the 8-season DVD set and I'm off to the races. Jack Mangan says, original trilogy Star Wars, Godfather trilogy, MST3K. I would go with the original Star Wars trilogy also. That was kind of a holiday tradition in our house. So I could watch that over and over. Joel Harper says Pratchett's R.I.P. Discworld. Yep. CJ says
Letterkenny. Good stuff. It's a comedic show that's based out of Canada.
Our new son-in-law, Will Jakeway, says The King Killer Chronicles.
By Patrick Rothfuss. It's a fantastic series. Hasn't been finished yet.
I haven't seen that.
Two books. It's a book series. So they're going to supposedly do a TV series, but they haven't yet.
Old classmate of mine, April Stewart, says The Good Wife, Escaping Polygamy, and You've Got Mail.
John Miller Jr.
John Miller Jr. You'll share it now, mister. With a picture from Police Academy.
Yeah.
Craig says, he's got one comment here. Glenda Lyon says, Victoria. Yeah, so, the Craig, series. What is your go-to movie, book, TV show that you can't get enough of?
Well, lately it seems like it's been Marvel, because I've been anticipating, you know, Endgame so bad. But overall, throughout my life, I would say it's really falls down to two things. Hitchhiker's Guide, no matter which version it is, TV show or even the movie. I like the movie especially the books. And then Sherlock.
Okay, yeah.
You know, I'll always go every once in a while, I'll circle back around and read the books the stories all once again. Of course, Star Trek. I mean, always room for
you can always pull up a Star Trek, you know, it's sort of like a go-to.
Yeah, but the problem is it's such a spin in the wheel, because some Star Trek episodes are sucky. I'm just saying.
It's like when you go to TNG, I go, okay, skip to season 3.
Yep. Yeah, right. There's some bad ones in there. I mean, there really are. So
there's a few good ones in the season 1 and 2, but it's mostly 3 and 4.
Brian, you?
Anything with Tom Hanks. I'm a big Tom Hanks fan. I like all his movies, so I can watch them over and over again. You know, there's always Shawshank Redemption. I can watch that thing a bajillion times.
That's true.
That's just a good one. Movies you watch. Book-wise, I've read Shogun 8 times, so by James Clavell.
You read it.
Okay. Oh, that book is like this, too, so it's like monster huge. I've read it lots of times. King Killer Chronicles, I've read multiple times as well. Books I'll read over and over again. Doesn't matter. Series, I'll read them over and over again. If I like them, I'll read them. Doesn't matter.
Like Hitchhiker's Guide for me.
I've read Hitchhiker's Guide like 3 or 4 times easily. All 3 of them.
I think I've done 2 through
3 of them.
Lord of the Rings is a good reread too.
I mean, you need to expand it some there.
There's four. Four. There's four.
There's six.
Now, 4 good ones.
Okay. Yeah, it's like how many Star Wars movies are there?
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
There's really only 4 good Hitchhiker's books, dude. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay, fine.
Yeah, Star Wars is a good one, too. It's pretty much the original trilogy is pretty good. And actually, if you rewatch the recut extra editions, how they put them in a different order, they work a lot better. So
I'm not
the machete order.
The machete order. Uh-huh. You bet. That works great.
The more recent ones are good too, like Rogue One and Solo. I've been enjoying those too.
I like Solo. Solo was fun.
Yeah.
I wish it was more well received or didn't get so much crap, because it was worthy of seeing a little bit more.
Yeah.
Top of my list is Monty Python.
Oh yeah. You can't.
You can always throw on a Flying Circus episode. Short. Get you in, get you out, get you back in a good mood. Mm-hmm. Quoting lines. Holy Grail is always fun if you get friends over.
That's an easy to go to. Yeah, that's an easy to go to.
It's especially fun indoctrinating new people. Like, what am I watching? Because that's the same thing we all thought the first time.
It's true.
And then you come back a year later, it's now their favorite. I've watched it 5 times.
It's very fair.
Books. I'm going to go the non-sci-fi route. I'm going to say Getting Things Done by David Allen. I've been through that a number of times.
Yeah.
Because you always find something new to make you a little more productive or make your life a little easier.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because I was just listening to Carl Pauline.
He had
podcast.
A 2-series part with David Allen. He must have been, I don't know where he lives now. Is it the UK or Germany or something? They're on opposite sides of the planet. I think Carl had the daytime.
No, Carl lives in Korea.
Carl's in Korea. David, where was David?
David Allen, he lives in Amsterdam.
He mentioned that's where he was. So they are kind of on opposite ends of the planet. And I think David drew the short straw, because he sounded really tired and
Yeah, get
Carl sounded wide awake and caffeinated. It was an interesting listen.
Well, I thought it was ironic that I saw you mentioned it, but I saw it, the podcast, and I listened to it, and I just started rereading Getting Things Done. I just heard
interesting.
That.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, that was kind of weird timing.
I have somewhere the audio from his 2-day workshop. So I don't know that I've actually read the book, but I've gone through that workshop a couple of times, which is effectively the same as the book. All right, let's do the history thing. Roll them, boys.
All right, let's see what we got.
Oh, man.
Oh, that 15. Didn't sound good.
I got a 15. Not too bad.
Okay. Brian?
17.
16. We all rolled high. The monster be slain by this group.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You got a 15, 16, and 17?
Yep. So we got.
That's kind of weird.
So Craig got 15.
Hey, we're all kind of middle of the line there.
It's Brian, Chuck, Craig.
Yep.
Brian, Chuck, Craig. All right. Where's the music? On this day in history for April 10th, 2019, this is the 100th day of the year. That means tomorrow is the 101 day of the year. In the Gregorian calendar, there are 265 days remaining as of April 10th.
It was on this date in 837, is that BC, AD? I'm not sure which, but that Halley's Comet made its close approach to Earth at an equal distance of 0.342 AU, that's 5.1 million kilometers, or 3.2 million miles for those in the U.S.
How many cubits is that? Do we need any more unit conversions for this
I think
thing?
There should be cubits in there. Craig, next time, get on that.
Okay, I'll do that.
And with inflation, too.
Yes.
That same date in 1815, the Mount Tambora volcano begins a three-month-long eruption lasting until July 15th. The eruption ultimately kills 71,000 people and affects Earth's climate for the next 2 years. Isn't that kind of what spurred the potato famine in Ireland because the temperature dropped? And okay.
It was dark and stormy, yeah.
It was also on this date in 1858, after the original Big Ben, a 14.5-ton bell, fell for the place of Westminster, a crack during testing. It is recast into the current 13.76 tons. They didn't have enough metal to make to match the first one.
the mass was why it cracked. Who knew?
Yeah, it was made by the Whitechapel Bell Vandal.
I just want to go over to London, take a tour, and when somebody says, this is not the original Big Ben, and jump in with this factoid and watch their face go, how did you know that? I do a podcast.
And I read Wikipedia.
April 10th, 1866, the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, ASPCA, is founded in New York City by Henry Berg.
On April 10th, 1872, the first Arbor Day is celebrated in Nebraska. That's when all the ships come sailing into the Arbor.
Nebraska?
That was my Charlie Brown line. Never mind.
Yeah. It was also on this date in 1912 that the RMS Titanic set sail from Southampton, England on her maiden voyage. And only voyage.
Yeah, I was going to say, I want to amend that there, pal.
Have fun storming the castle.
Professional Golfers Association of America, the PGA, is created in New York City on this date in 1916.
New York City. April 10th, 1925, The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald is first published in New York City by Charles Scribner's Sons.
Paul McCartney announces that he's leaving the Beatles for personal and professional reasons on this date in 1970.
It was Yoko Ono's fault.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It could be.
I think you're on the birthdays.
German mathematician, physicist, and physician, Einfried Wather von Schirnhaus. Schirnhaus is born this date in 1651.
Oh, how I wanted Craig to get that.
That's okay.
There's more coming. Born April 10th, 1713, English geologist and clockmaker, John Whitehurst.
Giovanni Aldini, Italian physicist and academic, was born on this date in 1762.
He said Aldini.
Aldini. Born April 10th, 1919, American engineer and academic, John Hubault.
Omar Sharif, the Egyptian actor and screenwriter, was born 87 years ago today.
English chemist and academic, Carol V. Robinson, was 63 today.
Also turning 60 today is American singer-songwriter and guitarist Brian Setzer. Guys, does that make you feel old? It should.
60, yeah.
Yeah.
She's 60 and 17. I'm in big trouble now. American actor, producer, and screenwriter Orlando Jones is 51.
Nice.
And last but not least, English actress, Daisy Ridley, born on this date in 1992.
It's almost like we were just talking about Star Wars.
Yeah.
Listener birthdays this week include April 14th, Danny Harnish, and Mrs. Technorama.
Oh, Don, it's your birthday. On happy birthday early. Yay.
She'll be 29.
I don't believe you, Chuck. She's barely over 25.
Wait a minute. Why are you doing next week's birthdays?
Because it's everything from the 10th to the 7th to 16th.
You know how this works, okay. Right? Right, Craig?
Yeah, yeah, sure, whatever.
If you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, get a shout-out, go over to chuckchat.com/wiki and put your name on there. We'll give you a shout-out. Some people are even putting their kids, their wives, their in-laws, their cars.
Their pets.
Crazy stuff on there. And we will give you a shout-out at the appropriate time of year. If it's your birthday and you're not on the calendar, we wish you all the best and hope that you consider joining the calendar. So that's the way it was on this day in history for April 10th, 2019.
I love that song.
Hey, by the way, I retract my earlier statement about the birthdays because I didn't want Donna to miss out or think that I wanted her to miss out on it.
Good save. Good save, buddy.
All right. Where's the impending news, everyone?
It's right over there.
There it is.
Impending news, everyone.
Because this is impending news. The GPS might be coming up for... This is fascinating. I was waiting for the next epoch of 2037 when all the unsigned long Unix dates roll around, but...
No, this is going to be much more fun.
I know. It was the signed Unix dates, but I think most of them are unsigned now.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Global Positioning System time epoch is ending and another one is beginning, an event that could affect your devices or any equipment or legacy system that relies on GPS for time and location. See, most clocks obtain their time from the Coordinated Universal Time, UTC, which is not spelled UTC. It's Coordinated Universal Time. Figure that one out.
Yeah.
It's not very a coordinated initialization, though.
No kidding.
But the atomic clocks on satellites are set to GPS time, which stands for Positioning System Global. No, just messing with you there. The time signals you can get from GPS satellites are very accurate and globally available. And so they've often been used. What kind of sentence is that? Are we reading from comicbook.com again?
Yeah, it must be. So,
they're often used by systems as the primary source of time and frequency accuracy. When Global Positioning System was first implemented, time and date function was defined by, get this, a 10-bit number. So unlike the Gregorian calendar, which uses year, month, and date format, the GPS date is a week number, or WN. Sounds like Southwest flight numbers. The WN is transmitted as a 10-bit field in navigation message and rolls over and resets to zero every 1,024 weeks.
Okay.
Since that time, the count has been incremented by one each week and broadcast as part of the GPS message. The GPS week started January 6, 1980, and it became zero for the first time at midnight, August 21st, 1999. Oh, that's ominously close to Y2K.
Mm-hmm.
At midnight, April 6th, the GPS WN is scheduled to reset. Oh, it happened.
And we're still here.
Well, nobody crashed into my house. That's a good thing.
I guess that's a good thing, yeah.
So apparently nobody's using the old legacy TomToms or anything anymore. Let's see. Which could be problematic for legacy systems and impact time and the time tags in location data. Utilities and cellular...
You got Craig Step problems, I see.
Yeah, Craig Steppy syndrome.
Stepositis. Utilities and cellular networks also use GPS. The S is little. It's like GPs.
GPs.
For receivers and timing and controlling certain functions. Someone needs an editor on their
blog. TechCrunch needs an editor bad.
So it should be noted that WN restart date could be different in some devices depending on whether the when the firmware was created. The bug, which is some have described as the Y2K of GPS, they just want to throw more letters at us, will cause problems in some GPS receivers, such as resetting the time and corrupting location data. You're driving down the road, all of a sudden, you're in Africa. What?
Yeah,
that's,
yeah, but if it's you know, if it's a modern device, more than likely it'll be patched and it'll be fine, right?
Yes. Work has been done to avoid this kind of rollover issue, or at least punt it down the line. The modern GPS navigation message uses a 13-bit field, which repeats every 8,192 weeks. So you're good for, let's see, if the last one was good for almost 20 years, from 1980 to 1999.
40-ish years?
Fine with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
it's going to be way longer than that. 120?
It's 8 times longer than 20 years.
Oh, okay. It's 160 years.
Works for me.
Yep, I'll be dead.
Hold on. Barbie just called. She says math is hard.
Math is hard. It's true.
Careful, buddy.
Yeah, because I was going to say, Craig, language is hard.
Okay, we're coming out with self-driving cars. Well, we have an article on a self-driving spacecraft.
What could possibly go wrong?
Brian!
So, Europe's next asteroid mission could launch in 2023. It will rely on the same kind of navigation technology as self-driving cars.
Hope their GPS has more than 10 bits.
Yeah.
No kidding.
It's named Hera after the Greek goddess of marriage. This proposed planetary defense mission, would visit the 2,500-foot wide, 780-meter asteroid 6583 Didymos. I was trying to read the next word, Didymos, and its tiny satellite, the 525-foot object informally nicknamed Diddy Moon.
That's not a moon.
Or Diddy Moon. So, while deep space missions typically rely on controllers back to Earth to send navigation commands, Hera will have an automatic navigation system built in. This will allow Hera to steer itself in real time rather than waiting several minutes to receive command signals from Earth. Yeah, let's hope the GPS signals are all good for that thing. But yeah, so it'll basically drive out. Really interesting. I'm curious. Can you scroll down a little bit more, Chuck?
Yeah.
So if you think self-driving cars are the future on Earth, and Hera is a pioneer of autonomy in deep space, and that's from Paolo Martino, the lead system engineer for Hera. He said that in a statement. Having an autonomous navigation system will now enable the spacecraft. Boy, we're having Craig Itis here today. To fly closer to both Didymos, or Didymos, I'm not sure.
Didymos,
yeah.
Sounds like the name of an operating system.
Yeah, it does. Didymos.
Yeah.
And Didymos.
I've been calling Didymos. It's taking me forever
to get it. Did you flash your Didymos?
Yeah.
You can get arrested for that.
Yeah. So basically, since it allows it to fly closer because it's autonomous, basically it allows it to take better pictures. So that's what they're hoping for. It basically relies on data from sensors, cameras, and lasers, just like your typical self-driving car.
But this camera, sensors, and lasers on your self-driving car are looking at lines on the road. They're looking for other vehicles. What is this using as reference? Like, there's a rock.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's easy enough to predict where the thing's going to be, where the asteroid is, so it can go towards it.
Right.
But then you got to have AI to kind of track it, you know, like look at it. And I guess maybe take an image and, you know, use a little AI to kind of stay within
where it's going,
you know, a certain spot. Like, for example, in that video, you see there it's lasered in on a little crater, and use that as a focal point where you can see if it's getting off and kind of, you know, stay within that.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. I see what it's doing. Yeah.
Let's find out.
This video will resume in 30 seconds.
Oh, no, we're not doing a commercial.
But that's still pretty cool. I mean, yeah, I imagine what it is. You set it on the path. Once it gets closer than it, or as a certain period, it takes you know, a photograph, compares where it's at, that sort of thing. And then once it gets closer and closer, it can get actually the laser, the radar, the LiDAR, that sort of thing.
Okay.
But still, you know, self-driving cars have done so well. What could be possibly wrong with a satellite?
Well, you're not going to kill anybody.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah.
It's one vehicle out on an asteroid way out there.
Hopefully it doesn't get turned around and comes back to Earth and just boom.
Well, here's the flaw with your logic. We're talking about man-made objects. So, just saying.
It's just software. You can always patch it.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
Quick, patch it quick. It's going towards Houston.
You know, the last Windows 10 update that, you know, rolled out and caused bricks.
How did this self-driving robot hijack this asteroid and steer it towards Earth? I think we have a bug.
Skynet became aware.
Exactly.
Skynet.
Aliens find it and they're like, hey, you know what? Let's send it back with a smarter.
This is V'ger.
Yeah. V'ger.
All right. Quick shout out to the chat room. We're having so much fun here ourselves. We're not alone, though. You can join us every week, every Sunday. I almost said every weekday. Every Sunday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern time on Facebook.
Here I am Monday night. Guys.
Yeah.
I mentioned Doug Schultze, Gary Lindros, Scott Tyler, John Miller Jr. We've got Scott's daughter, Courtney, was in here for a little while. Ralph Wangler. Who else do we have? What do you see, Craig?
I'm seeing the same names you're mentioning.
I see dead people.
Apparently we have the same friends.
Yeah.
Oh, my cousin John Byers is here. Good. Thank you for joining us, everybody. This is kind of what we do for fun. And it's led to a career of insanity.
Oh, fellow scouter Elton Chapman just popped in.
All right.
I saw him this weekend. Yep.
Good.
Excellent.
Let's see. We have a Remember When. We haven't played our Remember When song. There we go. We have a weird machine that measured radio audiences. It was kind of like an automated Nielsen thing. Craig, would you take this over?
Sure. In the early days of radio broadcasting, there was no easy way.
No, you have to do like an old-timey radio.
In the early days of radio broadcasting, there were no easy way to tell how many people were listening to the soap operas and prestige crime dramas.
And subsequently, how many were actually hearing the radio ads for tooth powder and your name brand coal?
The finest anthracite.
That's right.
If you listen to some old Lone Rangers or something, they're coal commercials. Yeah.
So it wasn't like counting the number of newspapers sold to get an idea of how many people at least had the opportunity to see a given advertiser's message. Radio had nothing analogous. So media researchers took to using crude tools to figure out what Americans wanted to hear over radio airwaves. So before the rating services started, a lot of it was fan mail. Okay. Yeah. Karen Buzzard, professional media, a professor of media and communications at Fairleigh Dickinson University, called Gizmodo. She explained that the amount of fan mail served as a crude metric to gauge how many people were listening to a particular program and what they had thought about it. Whereas my own fan mail, I don't know why they put it in quotes, these days consists of strangers calling me a libtard
or worse.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like comments. Feedback now.
Sounds like comments on a typical post.
Or worse, yeah. So direct feedback through the U.S. Post Office was actually a fairly useful way to tell the audiences and consumers liked and didn't like way back in the early 20th century. So before long, researchers were calling people up on the phone and asking them what they had listened to the day before.
They had to crank the phone.
Yeah.
Clara, patch me through to Zach.
Yeah.
What are you listening to?
Patch me through to A25.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a party line. I can get a whole bunch of people's answers at once.
Yeah. Anyway, you can see a picture of the device. I won't go through all the gory details, but you can see a picture of the device. And
it's called the Audimeter, which is cool, I thought.
Yeah, that is a cool name for it.
Fairly compact. I'm surprised that the size of this is not as big as I would have expected. And I like their graphs and charts, too. Minutes listened per minute broadcast by families tuning in. How often did they the time they changed the station after tuning in? That's you know, like webpage statistics today. How long are they staying on your site? Where are they going after they left? How did they get to your site? This for 1940s. This is pretty impressive.
Hey, yeah, by the way, John Miller Jr. said sponsored by Tommy's lead base paint. Now with extra lead.
Oh, you got to have a cigarette commercial there too. Don't forget
Carlton.
Yeah.
Yes. Smoke Tillitons.
So this podcast is not brought to you by Chesterfield cigarettes.
I'm not going to repeat it here, but you made me think of the cigarette commercial on Idiocracy.
That's exactly what I was saying.
Yeah. You kind of make me want to bring back the Radio Yesterday podcast now.
Yeah.
Funny. But it's pretty interesting how well that is for, you know, pretty compact technology for the time, the day. You think
with vacuum tubes, too.
Yeah. That's pretty clever. So question is, I wonder, do they go out to somebody's house, install it?
Sneak in at night.
Or did they just, you know, ship radios with certain radios with it? Or
was it intercepting the frequencies?
Sneak in at night.
So, I want to know how it worked.
Well, so what it did is it basically had knobs and dials in it. So what happens is you turn it to different things and it would record where you're listening to on the thing.
Go back to that last one. There was a write-up that said the Hunter Autometer, a remote recorder used in connection with table models where it is inconvenient to install the audiometer near a radio.
Yeah.
It may be put in a closet at some distance from the set.
So that was the bigger one. There's a smaller one that was actually attached, kind of, yeah, like that one right there. Well, that's in the closet. But there was one that was actually kind of next to the unit itself. There you go.
Yeah.
And so that way it would record and it has like levers and whatnot. So depending on where you turn on the dial, would show what you're tuning into, how long you're there, that sort of thing.
You know what? Cool. You could have done something like this where you had this device near a radio, just had it sitting there, and maybe during the program, play a certain tone.
They were listening to WTMJ out of Milwaukee. Wait a minute,
it would play. You know,
they're grinding their teeth?
No, I'm saying, listen, my thought is you could have the device hear that tone, and it would make a mark that, oh, you were listening to this station, and a different tone for a different station. Almost like, almost like frequencies that outside of the human hearing, but the computer would be able to say, oh, that was this. Nowadays, you just have your mini microphones in your house. Just listen to what
Alexa, stop eavesdropping on me.
He's watching Alf again.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. It's pretty cool for the technology at the time. Think about it. That's pretty nifty.
Yep.
Very, very cool.
Thanks for finding that story for us, Craig.
You're welcome.
Give a shout out to our patrons because they help keep this show going along. Thank you very much. This show is brought to you by you and you and you and you. These are the patrons that make our show possible. Kyle Nishioka, Megapodtastic, Leon, Saturday Morning Media, Amber Elstan, Stephen Weshy. I'm going down.
I was
going to
say, you're going down.
Huh? Yeah. Avner Braverman, Night King Studios, John Noble.
That John Noble?
That our John Noble.
No, he's not that one, but he's ours.
Steve Therian, Harold McKinstry, Ben Vaughn, Gary Lindros, Chris MC, Jorgish Rowan, Amy Bowen, Mike Wills, John Clifford, Alexis Duran, John Miller Jr., and Denise Inglis. Thank you very much, all of you, for your support. If you want to become a patron, join us over at patreon.com/technoramapodcast, and you will get a shout out on the show and extra content. Kind of like what we had at the beginning of the show, but a little slightly more organized than that.
Yeah. Barely.
And by the way, my OCD is kicking in. We have three, an odd number of people here. So we got three empty slots to fill up this row. So
you're your CDO again, huh?
Yeah. Go throw in a dollar at Patreon, please.
There you go.
All right. I just realized we didn't take a break and we should probably do that before we go into the media corner.
I was just rolling into it, man. Just roll into it.
Should we skip the break?
That's fine.
Who needs a break?
Fine. Yeah.
Power through.
We're doing a marathon podcast now.
Yeah. We're at hour 23.
Where's my media corner? There it is.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here in the media corner.
We'd have to take a break if we had any sponsors.
Yeah, that's true.
Thank goodness for the... Wait, did I just say thank goodness we don't have any sponsors?
Who are you?
Yeah.
So, Craig, you saw a movie.
I did.
I saw Shazam. Share your thoughts.
Yeah, I saw Shazam. Did you guys see it?
No.
I have not.
Oh, okay. Well, it'll be one side of conversation. I'm used to that.
Okay, are there spoilers? Should we play the spoiler alert?
No, okay. I'm not gonna spoil anything. But I will suffice it to say, and this is... It kind of goes with any of the reviews I've read online or seen or anything like that. It is a fun movie. That was what Superman should have been like. It was lighthearted, and there was a lot of humor.
Okay.
And there were some times when it, you know, got a little serious for a few things, but it wasn't like over the top. I thought it was, the tone was great. Zachary Levi is great at playing a big man-child.
Zachary Levi from Chuck.
Chuck, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
He's so awesome in it.
Obviously, you know Shazam, Billy Batson, he says the word and he turns into an adult, but he's he's got his own mind in the adult's body.
Kind of like Big.
Yeah, it's like Subaru Big is actually, what pretty much everybody's been saying.
Yeah, and that's even he said that. It was like Big, a superhero version of Big. And yes, I would totally agree with that. Like I said, everybody was perfect. You know, there was plenty of opportunity for, you know, the kids that are also in it to for it to get a little, not chintzy, that's not what I was going to say. Schmaltzy? But, you know,
cheesy? Cutesy. Campy?
Yeah, but it wasn't. It was actually a lot of fun. And I heard somebody else echo that, you know, it made them feel like they were 12 again, the type of movie it is, because it is, that's kind of how I felt. It was like fun to watch. So definitely worth a go see. Even if you're a little tired of the superhero genre, this is a little bit out of that norm.
Cool.
Kind of like Deadpool broke the mold.
Yeah, but oh, it wasn't on Deadpool level. Like,
No, I wasn't suggesting it was, because if you can bring kids actually, to Shazam.
Yeah, I mean, there were...
I wouldn't say young kids for Shazam. That's what people are saying. They're saying probably...
I heard there were a couple spots that were a little, not scary, but a little darker than you'd feel comfortable bringing, say, an 8-year-old.
A little. There were some S-bombs if you're worried about that kind of stuff or, you know, with your kids.
Okay.
Yeah, but Shazam, that was with the S-bomb, right?
Yeah, that was it. No, there was a few times when the bad guys and some other people dropped that. But aside from that, it was... clean enough. I had no problem taking a 12, 13, 14 year old. No problem.
Yeah. So okay. Most of my friends great. Say 10 over 10 usually.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Easy. As an
so
easy
scale
one.
Of 1 to 10, 10 being best, what would you give it?
It's a probably right at a 9, to be honest with you. I wish it actually, when
do we
I was
have
watching
a Craig
this,
factor in this?
No, I think he's probably right. Cause most of my friends have given it really pretty positive reviews.
Okay.
And they pretty much echo.
I wish Man of Steel was a little more lighthearted like this. Maybe not so much on the humor part, but just a little lighter feel. And that it made the movie so much better.
It's Superman, man. Superman's serious all the time. It's not serious.
Actually, I was thinking
he can make a lighthearted Batman.
When look, we've had a campy Batman, we've had serious Batman. And, you know, there's a lot of like on either side of those that fence. I would love to see like a campy Superman sometime.
Not going
to
happen.
I don't know where that would be.
It. No, they won't do it. They won't do it. Same with Batman. You'll never see that campy Batman again. You know, it's very rare that they even acknowledge that there was a Batman TV series. So, I mean, they barely, you know, recognize that Ben Affleck was Batman. So I'm just saying, you know,
everybody does.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be ever be a funny Superman or lighthearted Superman. And it's not going to happen. I don't think.
No, but
unless
if it was
we
a little bit,
made it.
Oh, and you know what? I did find I had not seen it up until recently. I finally watched Aquaman, and it wasn't quite as well. I'm gonna say it wasn't quite as it didn't take itself so seriously either, and it was actually a lot of fun to watch.
I haven't watched it yet. I got it, but I haven't watched it. So
it was also definitely worth a watch. Beautiful. Oh my God, it was just beautiful. It was a beautiful film. It's like, you know, the first time you saw Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all colorful under the water. It's like that. But yeah, the movie was actually, I wouldn't say it's perfect, but it was certainly a lot of fun to watch. And if DC keeps going in that route, I'm all in, because that's what it need. That's what they need.
Well, plus it's got Jason Momoa. He's actually kind of a funny, kind of humorous kind of guy too. Plus he's hunky man candy, so I'm good at that.
Yeah, I'll go with that one. It was good.
Yeah.
So definitely check out Aquaman too.
Okay. So thumbs up on Shazam.
Absolutely.
Good, good.
Six thumbs up.
You sound like, what was it? From Dancing with Elephants years ago? Caleb. Yeah. Nikolai would always give 97 thumbs up. Like, okay, you really like this movie then.
That's right. That's right.
It suddenly turned into like this new numerical scale, and every week he got more thumbs. To say the kid was all thumbs would be an understatement. We have the Geek Library. Two things. I still like this music.
See, you need Morgan Freeman in there right there going, Geek Library. Something like that, you know, somebody with the voice.
I'm tempted to listen to that on double speed now. There are some shows that I've never listened to on single speed, and I don't think I ever will. Like, I've gotten so used to their intro
mm-hmm.
that it would sound like, whoa,
It's long. It's really long and slow.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially if a music podcast, it's hard to listen to at double speed.
Yeah, that's true. Like when Slusher throws in a song, then you back off. All right. Yeah. We have some space porn. This is cool.
Ooh.
From Vox.com. See, on Earth, total solar eclipses are spectacular events, but they're the result of a total coincidence. The moon, in the moments it passes between the Earth and the sun, is just the right size to cover the sun completely from where we stand. It blots it out, revealing the sun's atmosphere, the great glowing solar corona.
Ooh.
I believe the ratios are 400 to 1. It is 400 times, the sun is 400 times further away, but it's also 400 times bigger. There's no scientific reason for this. We're just lucky.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And as the moon is slowly moving away from us, I think it's, what is it, 0.5 centimeter a year or something like that? It's very slow, or a centimeter a century. It's eventually there will be no more total solar eclipses. They'll all be annular solar eclipses.
Hmm.
So in March, NASA's Curiosity rover got to witness two solar eclipses. I would call them more transits than eclipses, but of the red planets. The most striking one was the Martian moon Phobos, which sped by Mars on March 26th. Unlike the Earth, the moons of Mars do not completely blot out the sun. Instead, they appear as smallish potato-shaped objects transiting across the surface of the sun. Whoosh! We're just going to show that one. It's like it goes round and round and round on the video.
Cool.
Whoosh! Here's what the rover saw on March 26th. Happy birthday to me. That was a good birthday present. Thank you, Curiosity. The image of Phobos was taken with Curiosity's mast camera with a special solar filter attached, kind of like a solar eclipse glasses you'd need to look at the sun on Earth. And then on March 17th, the much smaller moon Deimos made a much slower crawl past the surface of the sun. It was more of a transit. Kind of looks like when Venus goes past our sun. You can almost see it tumbling around, too. It's kind of cool.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder how long that little transit took. Mars's two moons, Phobos and Deimos, are small and distinct from our moon. Phobos, the larger of the two, is just 16 miles across. But what it lacks in size, it makes up for in speed. Phobos is caught in the very fast orbit around Mars, completing a revolution in about 8 hours. That means it rises and sets multiple times in a typical Martian day, which is about 37 minutes longer than ours. Phobos is incredibly close to Mars, orbiting at a distance of 3,700 miles. Our moon is 239,000 miles away. Deimos is even tinier, about 8 miles across, orbiting Mars once every 30 hours. So it takes a little longer. Mm-hmm. On Mars, there's a solar eclipse nearly every day. Well, if you're standing in the right place, I would expect so. The Martian moon Phobos' orbit is nearly directly over its equator. Our moon, on the other hand, is in a slightly tilted orbit, so the Earth, sun, and moon don't line up as often. And this isn't the first time Curiosity's captured images of the solar eclipses on Mars, but the images are important because they help scientists better understand the motion of Mars's moons.
Okay.
And if I remember right, one of them is spiraling slowly inward, and the other is spiraling slowly outward, like our moon.
Interesting.
So, cool pictures. I have never seen that before.
They're very neat, actually.
What's not very neat are cats.
Come on. Todd's a great cat.
We're all cat lovers here, and Craig found us a nice cat article, because it's not the internet if you're not talking about cats. Brian?
That's right.
So, cats are notorious for their indifference to humans, except when it comes to feeding time.
Yeah.
Basically, any owner will tell you this, that if you call your cat, they're going to be like, what? And they're not going to, they're pretty much ignore you. So
mine didn't even acknowledge me.
Oh, yeah?
They just sit there.
So according to a study published Thursday in Scientific Reports, domestic cats do recognize their own names, even if they walk away when they hear them. Tsuko Saito, a behavior scientist at the University of Tokyo, previously showed that cats recognize their owner's voice. In her latest study, she narrowed this down to investigating whether they respond to hearing their names. The study includes 78 cats from Japanese households and a cat cafe. Basically, a cat cafe, if you guys don't know about it, there are these little cafes where patrons can interact with felines. They can't have cats in their apartments or something like that. Basically, they want to go in, have a cup of coffee, pet the kitties, that sort of thing. It's really, really cool.
Oh, sign me up.
It's awesome.
That's where we're going next.
It's really neat, actually.
We're not going to get any new cats. We're just going to go
there. We're not going to visit them.
Not gonna go. I was gonna say I'm not carrying my cat to Starbucks.
No. They have them there. They're there. You just go in.
It's like a petting zoo kind of, and then you leave. It's somebody else's problem to feed them and wake them up in the morning and clean the litter box. Well,
on the flip side, I got plenty of cats at my house. I don't need to go somewhere else to see them. Wonderful.
So during their experiments, Sato and her colleagues used what behavioral psychologists call the habitation and dishabitation method. This involves repeatedly exposing a subject to a stimuli, this case a spoken word, until the subject no longer displays any reaction. When the subject is presented with a test stimuli, in case its name, the researchers observe whether it reacts. This helps rule out the response to random stimuli.
Okay.
So in the new study, scientists first had the cat owners repeatedly say four words that were similar to their cat's name until the cat habituated to these words. Then the owner said the actual name, and the researchers looked at whether the individual cats, when living among other cats, appeared to be able to distinguish their own monikers.
Interesting.
The cats had a more pronounced response to their own names, moving their ears, heads, or tails, or meowing, than to similar words or other cats' names. So they basically had...
What was that... There was an episode of Doctor Who where the baby didn't call himself. It was something. My name is
Earl.
He had some like royal name, and I'm the destroyer of worlds or something. And I think it was the Matt Smith I'm drawing a blank. I know our listeners might know the answer, but that's what I was thinking. It's like, my name is not Todd. My name is Herculon,
the destroyer of worlds.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing they did is they also had the researchers had people unfamiliar with the cats speak their name to test whether the cats recognize their name from these unknown people as well. Now, the responses were, of course, less prominent from their owners, but they still appeared to recognize their names. So as opposed to other words that were similar to the names.
Now,
so,
I can tell you, I've unofficially been doing that at my house, call a cat. And I usually get the cat's attention, the right one, not like if there's two of them and I say Lincoln, I get Lincoln's attention, not the other, not Domino. So I think they do. It's just they choose to ignore your,
So you have a cat named Lincoln. Do you have one named Booth?
They would just try and kill each other.
Exactly.
Lincoln, Washington, or you could go with Lincoln.
I think
Chrysler.
It's a car names instead of president names.
Yeah, Buick.
Lincoln lent his name to a lot of stuff, didn't he?
So basically, the study goes on to say, basically, they recognize their names when spoken by their owner, specifically because they recognize that voice because it's very particular to them.
Okay.
Now, the pets learn to recognize their name because guess what?
Food,
there's something in for it. Yeah, there's something in for it. So that is why, basically, they know their names.
All right.
That's basically the gist of it,
Yeah.
Todd knows his name.
He's
very much a dog. How many times did he go into the laundry room yesterday and I called him back?
So many times. It's hilarious.
So he wanders out, he talks to Brian, and I said, Todd, come here. And he'd come out of the laundry room. 30 seconds later, he's back in there. And I said, Todd, come here. And he keeps coming.
It's crazy.
It's like, you got food for me? Then I'm going to talk to Brian.
Yeah, exactly. Because Brian might give me food because Brian sometimes feeds me. So,
Brian smells like food.
No, Brian feeds him. So that's why.
Oh, that's Brian, right.
I was one that fed him too. Mary didn't feed him. So,
Brian.
He knows me for sure.
And then he looks out the window longingly.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Brian.
And whenever we walk by, we're like, hey, Todd. And he's like, meow. So funny. And he's like, hey.
He has so many moods.
He's a great cat.
He knows when to whisper. I was up at 4:30 yesterday and Donna was sleeping. I said, Todd, we have to whisper. And he's like,
that is funny.
Hey, I do believe you can train cats too, because I've totally done it. So on my side of the bed, a cat jumps up there, I always kick it off because I don't like being anchored down, when, like something on the outside of the covers have anchored me down. And so when I wake up in the morning, all the cats are on my wife's side of the bed.
Yeah, Kim Penn, she's like, help. Help.
So see, it works.
That's we funny. Were Train. we were at SeaWorld or something, and they had trained cats. The lady was walking and the cat would weave between her legs as she was walking. I thought that was so cool. I tried so many times to get Holly to do that.
They do that, but I think they're trying to kill me.
Hey, it's true. They take three steps in front of you and then stop.
Yeah.
I'm going down the stairs. What are you doing? No.
Holding a laundry basket. He won't see us.
Yeah. Deny me, tuna.
Oh,
That's no trick. They're trying to kill me.
Exactly. You're like, kick me off the bed. I'll get you, human.
You jerk human.
We have a new question of the week, which I'm probably going to throw up about an hour before showtime next week. What do you believe is the most mind-blowing fact about the universe? There's a good question.
That people have been listening to us for 15 years.
We are coming up on 14.
Or the fact that we believe that people have been listening to us for 15
561 episodes later.
That you guys have put up with each other for 15, almost 15
bazillion years. Interviews.
Yeah.
That we haven't torn each other's eyes out yet.
No, not yet.
Not yet.
Hey, it's led to some wonderful things.
It's true.
Absolutely.
Well, I think it's because he's on that side of the U.S. and you're on this side of the U.S.
And we only get together about three times a year actually.
That's probably part of it.
Do this.
You can just kind of.
Yeah, this year we do. Yeah.
It's gotten more frequent since you started working for ServiceNow, fortunately.
Yeah.
We get a couple of trips off of them. All righty. Yeah. And Dragon Con. We got Dragon Con. We got our conference. The cruise. Oh, we got the Star Trek cruise now, too.
I'll say the cruise, yeah.
We should do a recording next year on the cruise.
Sure.
We were going to try doing that, like a daily journal for our Trek people, but never happened.
Are you coming, Brian?
No.
They're sold out now.
Yeah, they already sold out.
Oh, is it? Oh, I didn't even look. Sold out. Wow.
And I just found that when we were coming back from the last cruise, the Uber lady or the Lyft lady wrote down her email address and said, oh, let me know. I just found it like yesterday.
Oh,
oopsie.
No.
Oops. Hope she made it. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you very much, Brian.
Thank you very much, Chuck.
Thanks for all the help, Craig.
Yes, sir. My pleasure.
It probably wouldn't get done if it was left to me alone. Where's the music? There it is. We appreciate you joining us, whether you're on Facebook, YouTube, listening as a podcast download, or direct from the website, anywhere you go. We appreciate it. The website, if you forgot, is chuckchat.com/technorama, like I almost did.
Oh, I'm glad you told me.
Getting old is rough. Call us on the listener line. I think the cobwebs are still there. 707-530-2428. We'd love to hear your voice. Or you can write us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. All of this information and more, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, whatever, is on our website at chuckchat.com/technorama. So, until next time, tell a friend about Technorama. They'll be glad you did. Craig, give us that binary high five.
101.
Because that's the way we do it.
The way we roll. D20.